All right, our ultimate presenter of today, the session, is Carl Thickery from Dort College.
And University.
Dort University.
Yeah.
And Susan, I'm going to talk at periodic table because it's a song of praise.
So I'm Carl Thickery from Dort University, also in the chemistry department, so we've got a run of chemists here going on. About 5 years ago, we moved back into our newly renovated chemistry facilities. We got into the walls and started over. And of course, when you do that, there's all sorts of design issues, and as you have blank walls that need to be filled with things, particularly in the hallways. And so about a year later from that, after getting settled, I approached our art people, and we commissioned one of our art faculty to put together a periodic table artwork for one of our hallways, and that's the picture you see up here on the screen, and that's what I want to focus on, but I'm going to come away from it and come back to it as we go along here. And basically, the parameters that we gave him were we wanted to look like a periodic table. You'll notice this is the wide form. I had a beautiful hallway that supported the wide form, so I was really excited about being able to do that. And that we had to, be able to identify the individual elements. And then after that, he was free to design as he wanted. I do have to acknowledge that this idea was not original with me. I got it from my colleagues at Trinity Western. They had done something similar some years earlier. And behind this, there's also a fundraiser, which will sort of become evident as you see some of the close-ups of the project. So that project, the artwork was done back in January, late last year, and so we installed it over our Christmas break, and I had the joy of actually participating in that. That was kind of fun to be able to do that, and that got me stewing and thinking about things, and a number of things sort of conflated at the same time, and that's where this idea came from, thinking about how the periodic table and how this particular periodic table functioning as an art piece rather than a scientific piece can help us think imaginatively about science, about creation, and then how that ultimately points us to our creator. And that's what I want to explore with you today. So I'm going to do this sort of in three parts, as I noted in the abstract, not in the order in the abstract. I realize that they're reviewing this, but that's okay. I'm going to start with talking about Tom McLeish's work. He wrote a book a number of years ago called Faith and Wisdom in Science. It's a survey of creation texts in scripture and such. And somewhat atypically, at the center of this book, he puts the book of Job as a creation text rather than our traditional look at, say, as a psalm or at the first chapter of Genesis. And he works out a theology of science. And we don't have the time to go through all the details of that theology of science in this context here. But there are some points here that I think are particularly valuable in that context. So. And I'm going to jump right into actually the latter, or pretty quickly into the latter part of Job. But basically, McLeish, in his analysis of Job, wants to put Job sort of as the pinnacle of creation texts in Scripture. There's a lot of discussion of the nature of creation and how it plays into Job's suffering. He treats Job's suffering thoroughly as well in this analysis too, but he's trying to get at the creation themes. And in particular, we get the question about what does wisdom mean in here? That's a little bit helpful to our discussion here. And he describes it in a couple different places, a couple different ways. This is one, an intensely practical method of living most fruitfully in the real world. Okay. And then he also talks about chaos. And I don't know that I have time to quite delve into that piece of it as much as I like, but there's a few references to it as well in the slides here as we go along. So I want to jump into the 28th chapter. Again, don't have time to go through the whole chapter in detail. But I want to jump into the 28th chapter because I want to suggest that there's a bit of chemistry there. And as chemists know, there's not a lot of direct chemistry in the Bible, so we got to take what we can get. So, and so I'm going to do that. And I will admit that a geologist or material scientist can make a similar sort of parallel case here. But we have in Job 28, this is an interlude after all these conversations between Job and his friends where they're trying to figure out this suffering piece and so on. And then in comes a narrator to ask a few other questions and give us a little different point of view. And particularly, at this point, just want to point out that he talks about mining and mining for gold, silver, iron, copper elements, right? Obviously, he didn't understand them as elements, and I'm not suggesting that we're talking science here, but in a modern sense. But we've definitely got some sense of, and thinking about the stuff of creation itself, proto-chemistry or proto-science, right? We also see mention of smelting and other processing steps, right? So manipulating creation, and that's a theme that is, I think, very important to what I want you to think about today, the idea of chemical change. And so we have some anticipation of chemistry here and some anticipation of science, particularly in this comment, bringing hidden things to light. And then on the other side, and this ties to our art project, is something that's well known in the history of chemistry, the use of chemistry kinds of ideas in the production of art, even in relatively ancient cultures, through the use of precious metals for objects, and also looking for things like dyes and pigments and so on, which is about as ancient in chemistry as any other use and so on. All right. So we get to, get these two ideas of the manipulation of creation, the material level of creation, and a theme of a connection between some science and some art. Okay. But then that chapter changes tone a little ways in. At about verse 12, we have this segue into where shall wisdom be found? Right? The miners have been digging around in the earth looking for things. And then there comes this question, well, were they looking for wisdom? And if they were, they didn't do a very good job because they don't find it. And the text is fairly clear that they don't get there. And so you get this sense, and this is sort of the traditional interpretation of this passage, you get this sense that this whole piece of the first part of the chapter, and then again a second sort of look at it, in verses 12 to 22, is sort of a fruitless search for wisdom. And we get that last verse in the chapter that ends with the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. Right? And then there's an encouragement there to say that, but that also sort of comes, and it's often read with a dismissive tone of all that comes before it in the chapter. Right? So all that great chemistry is a waste of time in a sense. Now, I will want to be clear here. McLeish is not coming at this from the point of view of a chemist. That's my layer on top of this. McLeish is a physicist, and he's talking broadly about this text and science in general. But at the same time, he comes at this passage, and he says, no, I dislike that. And he actually describes it as banal piety. I like that phrase. And he wants us to think a little bit differently about this passage. Because the last third of the chapter, we're still in chapter 28 here, the last third of the chapter is a bit of God going around the creation and also looking for wisdom. McLeish says, look, that's a parallel task to what the miners had been doing earlier on. And in a parallel task, it's like, well, maybe that's, you know, God isn't as negative about the activity of looking. Sure, you don't get to find wisdom. It's still found in the originates in God, but maybe there's some wisdom about wisdom that we can get out of this. And so he comes back with a description of wisdom as a path. He uses the word the way, which sort of anticipates some of what we hear in the New Testament even. But and the idea that God is perhaps inviting or doing this in parallel is an invitation to actually investigate creation, but maybe for different reasons than what we were thinking about. And he also wants to take this idea of the fear of the Lord, not in that negative sense, right? That we've got to put Job in his place, right? You're small, Job, quit trying to act bigger than you are, but rather the fear of the Lord as a sense of awe and wonder in the creation, right? Because that too can be understood as a fear of the Lord. And then he takes that to the conclusion then that wisdom is to be found in participating in a deep understanding of the world, its structures and dynamics, essentially an argument for investigating creation. Okay? So that's chapter 28. And then I'm going to jump to the last part of the chapter, and we're not going to go into quite as much detail there, even though there's quite a bit more text. But in the last part of the chapter, McLeish, talks about the whole passage there. Just a couple of points there. One is the line, "Gird up your loins." Again, right? When I want to read that, our traditional reading, I want to read it gruffly. It's, "Gird up your loins." Right? That's not what McLeish argues. That's not how we should read that. Rather, he says, look, that line is actually a legal reference of I'm challenging you, yes, but I'm challenging an equal. So God is challenging Job sort of as an equal. Obviously, he's still not an equal. Relationship, but there's a bit of equality there. And then he gets taken up into the whirlwind. So McLeish is saying this sense of gird up your loins is actually an invitation to start to look at creation from God's point of view. And in an attempt to get Job away from his thinking about his suffering in his own terms, but to think about the creation as a whole from the point of view of God, in a sense, as much as we can as human beings. Okay, and that just ties in then to the notion. Okay. Then there's a little bit about chaos, but I want to keep moving. The basic point here is that did Job get answers? And McLeish says he does. Yeah, he actually thinks this analysis gives a somewhat cleaner and tighter response to or approach to Job's suffering than other traditional methods. For our purposes, though, the key here is this sense of getting invited into thinking about creation deeply, getting to think about a love of wisdom of natural things. So the creation doesn't give us wisdom, but it points us to wisdom. Right? It's a pointer. And an invitation to think and envision. And this ties back to this notion of imagination I'm going to come back to in a moment. Imagining the creation and seeing the creation in a different and in a different light than we had thought about before. So that's a look at McLeish, Now I'm going to move on to my second character in this, and this is one of my colleagues, Justin Bailey. He's a theologian with an interest in aesthetics and apologetics. And he had written this book last year, and as a good colleague, I read his book. And I liked what he had to say. And it, as we were thinking, as I was thinking about this periodic table, there were some things in here that come out in this analysis. Bailey bases his work on the work of Charles Taylor. I'm watching the clock and seeing that I don't have time to spend time on this. Charles Taylor is no small thing to just briefly gloss over, but I have to do that. Basically, we want to. Charles Taylor is lamenting the loss of transcendent view in the world right now. And Bailey is trying to think about an apologetic that can sort of build off of that notion. And he focuses on the idea of imagination. So Bailey brings me the idea of imagination as an apologetic tool. And particularly imagination as it's expressed in the arts. Okay. And in the idea of seeing what's happening in the world, you know, noticing things, sensing it in the sense here is one of an emotional response to the natural world, and those two together then feeding into a desire to shape the world. Okay. And where that takes us is in our discussion of Job is a sense of something like this, right? God's whirlwind tour is a showing him a world of constrained freedom. That's the connection to chaos that I don't have time to get into. Shows him a world vastly greater, right? This is the awe of fearing the Lord. And then finally, not so much in the shaping, but a little hint of some of that shaping comes out in other parts of MacLeish's work. Okay. So imagination is important to our investigation of the world. So then one more character. This character is a distant chemistry colleague. If you're a chemist, you'll recognize the name. You hopefully will recognize the name Roald Hoffman. If you've taken organic chemistry, he's the Hoffman of the Woodward Hoffman rules. He's not a Christian. I think he's got some Jewish history, but he's a thoughtful thinker philosophically about the nature of chemistry in particular. Fortunately for me, I can capture the essence of it in one quote. Hoffman is basically wants to say that chemistry defies kind of the traditional notion of science as a discovery, right? We look into the universe to understand the laws of nature, kind of a thing. Because chemists, by nature, manipulate things to learn about creation. We make new molecules. We make new substances. I don't. I'm a theorist and experimental chemist. The organic people get to do all the fun synthetic stuff. But nonetheless, that's a core notion in chemistry. Okay? And so chemists make things. And we imagine our molecules, right? A good chemist can visualize a three-dimensional molecule and imagine a new one that doesn't exist anywhere in the universe. Right? And Hoffman says that's an artistic skill as much as it is a scientific one. Okay. And in doing so, we create something new. And so that to pull that together. I'm going to go straight to this one. We get this. We get from MacLeish, we get that science is, our wisdom is a journey, that creation is worthy of being investigated, that God wants us to see creation in matters that parallel what he sees. From Bailey, we get the idea of imagination And from Hoffman, we get the idea that art matters, artistic thinking matters to the chemist. So when Matt Drissel finally revealed this this all to us, and of course I saw it sort of in partial development, so I had years to sort of process a little bit. I see all of this here in this periodic table. Okay, I see a sense of seeing, right? Each tile, and I'm gonna just, each tile is a unique painting for each of the elements. And in them, we see things that point to the structures that we understand in chemistry, the way that we see chemicals, both at the molecular and the bulk scale, the macro scale. We also sense things as we look at these tiles. Cobalt blue just makes me happy, right? And stained glass makes me happy, right? It elicits an emotional, positive emotional response. But they also show us that we, as chemists, shape things. We shape things at the macro scale and at the molecular scale. It's not quite as nice on that last one, but and in doing so, start to get inspired, either as chemists or as visitors to our department or as students, to think imaginatively about what we can do as chemists and with the material creation, to imaginatively think and imaginatively explore the creation. And then, as a total aside, I also just put this in front of you, that if you're ever in the position of designing a space for a chemistry lab or a science lab in general, think about how you can use art, intentional art, to encourage these kinds of attitudes in your students and friends and parents and guests and faculty. So thank you for your time.
Just because this is the last chemistry talk per se, Ken, do you want to take it real quick?
Yeah. I'm Ken Marks. I'm a local guy, a chemist. And if you're interested, I'll open up the lab. Sometimes go on to the SABs and wonder what that school looks like inside. Oh. You know, fancy buildings. So I can walk you through the second floor anyway, on your way to dinner. If you want to do that, you go down all up the stairs. And then go back a little bit, that'll be our gym camp lab, I'll meet you there. So 10 minutes probably.
Great. So let's see, guys. 1, 2, 3, 4, did I miss people? 5, 6. Fire away, we'll see what we got.
Is there a planned coffee table book or something that would incorporate the...
Not planned, we're in conversation, right? We have to go through, it's a lot of respect for what did the artist do,
sure.
And what did we get permission when we commissioned. We commissioned the wall piece.
So we would be involved in.
Yeah, and those are some conversations we're having and so on. So yeah.
What is the scale of this installation? And are those tiles three-dimensional blocks or like?
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
The tiles are about 7 inches square plus the border. The hallways, the wall is 25 feet long and it's an 8-foot ceiling or 9-foot ceiling. That's the organic lab to the left. That's the skywalk to the building. And then the other thing is location, location, location. This is one of the most heavily trafficked hallways on campus.
Are they flat?
These are paintings. Yeah, so 2D, with no really third-dimensional texture or elements or anything.
So are you missing some passage metals and mathematics?
It has all 118 known elements on this. Okay. Yeah.
It's a stretch deck.
So right, a typical, where was that little periodic right? The traditional one that you see, right?
Right.
Takes this and pulls it down and moves it this way. So it fits better on a sheet of paper.
Right.
Yeah. So this is what's called the wide form.
Right. And the beauty about this, I mean, each of them are different pictures.
Right.
But when they put together, in a sense, there's a bigger picture.
Exactly.
Totally amazing.
Yeah, you see all the different qualities.
Thank you for the beautiful presentation. But you the slide before where you mentioned how kids coach, something stood out to me, and I think that puts things in perspective. You mentioned how that you can be the chemist, choose the molecule to be made, and I think that stands out to me because when my students come to me with a fear foundation, I tell them, you are a chemist in your kitchen as you cook. You are a chemist.
Oh, yeah.
So I think this stands out because putting that art, combining that art with chemistry is relevant to everyone, and not just chemists, not just scientists. Mm-hmm. So thank you for the description.
Thank you.
Now we're over here. Ready for your question? Believe you got a question?
No, I'm just
watching. Yeah, sure. I love this, and I'm a synthetic chemist, so I like the making of things, But my question is about Job 28. So you talked about the bleach a little bit, and the sort of God digging down, looking for wisdom or whatever. I was wondering if you or your reading of McLeish was that could be a playful sort of storytelling technique, kind of like in Genesis 2, where God is like looking around for a suitable partner for Adam, like, oh my gosh, we're going to find one. Oh, the dog isn't it, the deer's not it. Which, of course, God knows that those aren't right. It's not like he doesn't know that. And so God knows he's not going to find wisdom digging or whatever.
Right.
But if it's just building anticipation, if that's essentially what's happening in this story.
I hadn't thought about it that way. But I think, that seems like a very reasonable way to think about it. Because like you said, God knows what he's not going to find.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it also anticipates what then comes in the latter chapters too.
Yeah. Right.
Well, now I'm looking around. Now let me show you what I did.
Exactly. Right.
Thanks. Yeah.
Over
another question.
Yeah.
I was curious, there's arguments about whether you should put one group of the gene, gene one, and then put the apple on it. Did you guys talk about that? philosophical reasons?
Are you talking about this one right here?
Yeah.
No,
I
left that to Drissel's discretion. So he did his homework.
Okay.
Right? And it's either his father or his grandfather. If you read the very fine print, you can tell, but
not necessarily the philosophical stand on.
No. Because then where do you have hydrogen, right? I mean, then you get that.
Right.
I mean, that should be right here by itself. I didn't want to go that. My thinking of this is I want one that everyone will recognize, right? So we have to sort of stick at the junior high school and psychology level.
We should make the carbon tile larger.
Yeah.
It's the most important one, right?
It's the most important one.
Now, this is number 28. We're going to thank Carl.
Yes.